we start today's episode, just to let you know, you can now nominate for the 2025 Northern Power Women Awards to be in with a chance of celebrating with changemakers, trailblazers and advocates on the 6th of March 2025. Nominate now at wearepower.net.
Northern Power Women Podcast. For your career and your life, no matter what business you're in.
Hello. Happy February. How on earth did we get here already? Welcome to episode 32 of the Northern Power Women Podcast. Should we all be shouting about our pay? I'm Sam Walker, and this month we held our live panel in Burnley at Burnley College and discussed the barriers still holding back women from senior leadership, what career advice you'd give to the 18-year-old you, and whether you should discuss your pay with your colleagues.
We had a member of staff that looked after all the HR kind of stuff, and she had a list of all everyone's salaries. So she must have been photocopying something anyway. So what she did was she left the original in the photocopier. So someone then saw it. What? Oh, did it kick off or did it kick off or what?
The big interview is with Emily Cox, Group Head of Customer Relations at Lloyds Banking Group, who spoke to me about being a woman in finance during the global economic crisis and how shared parental leave will become crucial for firms to embrace in the future.
As you start to see the war for talent, I think we'll start to see these things become major influences in where people want to work, because it says something about the sort of business you are and what you stand for. And I think the loyalty it brings is exponential from both the mums and the dads, actually. Yeah.
And in Ask the Hive, who makes better leaders, introverts or extroverts?
There's many different types of humans on this earth, and we all relate to different things in a positive way.
But first, let's catch up with the founder of Northern Power Women, the ever busy, ever brimming with brilliant ideas, Simone Roche MBE, with some news from HQ.
It's great to be at Burnley College for episode 32 of the Northern Power Women podcast. And this month, it's all been about visible role models. And especially with the launch of our I Am NPW campaign to celebrate our fifth year. Please share your selfie and why you are Northern Power Women. Plus, don't forget to tag us in. Northern Power Women Awards shortlist has been announced with over 80 fantastic role models, including firefighters, activists and scientists. Shortly after, we've announced our Power and Future lists as we continue to grow our huge pool of awesome Northern role models. The winners of the awards will be announced on the 16th of March at Manchester Central Convention Complex, with over 1,600 guests attending so far. We're continuing to support the BBC 50-50 project, with the second in our series taking Northern Power Women onto the BBC breakfast sofa and behind the Radio 5 microphones to really get the feel of being in the media and having our voices amplified. It was then straight off to London for me to appear on BBC News Inside Track, where I was talking all things Northern Powerhouse and the awards. Then straight from there, up the road to number 10, where I was invited in to talk all about Northern Power Women and all about Northern Power Futures. So please watch this space. We're still looking for female directors who are looking to scale up their business. So if you are an established growing organisation in Lancashire, 2-0 are offering 10 places on a fully funded scale-up programme that Northern Power Women and Groundswell Innovation are going to be delivering. So please get in touch at connect@northernpowerwomen.com. The deadline is coming up at the end of February. We also had a brilliant gathering over at Spinning Fields with 100 role models interacting with a stellar panel of entrepreneurs. We saw peer-to-peer conversations. We saw great knowledge share. So please watch this space. We're going to be having more and more gatherings of these brilliant entrepreneurs. And finally, finished the month off with one of my heroes, the awesome June Sarpong OBE. I was invited to be a guest on her podcast, which was totally awesome. And next month, we're off to be working with United Utilities and hosting more of our Northern Power Futures Carousel Mentoring. Thanks for your support. Please keep the conversation going and speak next month.
Thank you so much to Simone, cramming more into a month than many people managed to do in an entire year. Brilliant stuff. Now this month, as we do every month, we got together and had a conversation. As ever, we pick three questions to chew over and hopefully give you some food for thought. Do come and join in the conversation by using the hashtag NPWpodcast on social media. It'll be great to hear from you. And this month, we're in Burnley.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are here today for episode 32, recording at Burnley College. We are delighted. We've been working Burnley College for the last year on various madness and projects, and thrilled to be here today. As ever on the Northern Power Women podcast, we talk about starting a conversation, and we can't do that without our stellar panel. So let me introduce to you first. We have Amin, who is the Business, Finance and Scale-Up Lead for Lancashire County Council. Amin leads on economic and strategic development activity linked to business growth across Lancashire, specifically with the recent and exciting launch of 2.0, which is Lancashire's dynamic drive on scaling businesses up, including ambitious female entrepreneurs who can become role models and empower others to smash through glass ceilings and scale their business. I feel like you need a cape or something with that. I really do. Next on our panel, I'd like to invite Dawn. Dawn starts a marketing director of Vika PLC based here in fantastic Burnley. Dawn started out at Dyson in new product development and marketing and has since worked for Philips, Electrolux and LG Electronics, amongst others. She now leads a team of marketeers and product developers at Vika, which is the UK's leading manufacturer of PVCU window systems, who, as I said, are based here in fantastic Lancashire. And finally, but not least, Sarah. Sarah is from here at Burnley College and is staff development manager. And Sarah is responsible for continued innovation and advancement of the organisation. Sounds fancy, doesn't it? Sarah leads the way in enhancing training and development for all. She's a passionate and progressive individual who works to support all the staff, promoting personal and professional development, along with a strong focus on enhancing teaching and learning. Welcome to our panel. Thank you. So we have three questions, and the first question is, there is a record number of women now holding senior management and director roles, but it's still only 29%. What are the barriers that women still face, and how can we knock them down? I mean, I'm coming to you because we said you had a cape, didn't we?
Yeah, great question to start off on. So I did say to Simone that, can I swear? And she goes, absolutely. I go, I feel more comfortable when I'm doing that. So if I do use any language that anyone has an exception to, just put your hand up and I'll make sure I try and refrain. What a great start. Anyway, what was the question?
It's all about being memorable, to be honest. So it's about this 29%. How are you going to break through those barriers?
So I think kind of it's quite interesting because we work with businesses right across Lancashire from so many different industries and backgrounds, etc. Businesses that have been established and businesses that have been started up. And this topic has probably come more on my radar in the last, I would say, 6 months. And it's really interesting to see what some of the challenges are. So I think if you look at certain industries, for instance, where there are barriers to what I would say more females coming in. So one of the areas I deal with, it sounds really boring, but business finance. So it's about where we lend businesses money. Now, that's an area where it's still very male dominated. And part of it, that is where you've got a lot of stigma attached to it. And you don't really see senior roles occupied by females. And there's a responsibility within each industry to recognize that and drive that forward. But then you look at the creative sector and there's a lot more females that are emerging in that area. So I think there's a number of things. Everyone has to have that responsibility, including academic establishments, councils, as well as businesses and government, to really kind of focus on that. And I'd like to think that it's going in the right direction. But for me, one of the main barriers is around stigma. I think there's still within industries where stigma is a huge thing. And I really feel embarrassed saying this, but I've kind of come across employers and businesses who, unfortunately, are not sorry or not shameful about when they think about employing people. One of the first things they think about is, will I have to pay for maternity cover at some point, right? Now, if that's the question you're thinking of, that's the absolute wrong place to start, because you're not thinking about the bigger picture. And that exists there. People are probably less, more vocal about that, but those stigmas are still there. So it's a real big education piece that's required.
And when I first set Northern Power Women up, I remember having a conversation with an executive chairman of a really huge company, and he just turned around and went, Simone, the problem with women is, and you know, you kind of think that conversation is not going to end well, is it? You know, and but his reason was, he says, well, they get pregnant and you can't recruit or promote them, so, because it's too expensive. That's why it's really important, I think, that we really engage great progressive leaders, great men as agents of change, of which I know this room at Burnley is full of. And it's important. It's not just about kind of men jobs, women jobs. Dawn, you've been breaking down barriers for fun, haven't you, in your career?
Oh yeah, I enjoy it. I think for me, the biggest advice I would give is confidence. I think confidence is absolutely key. I mean, I work in manufacturing. Manufacturing as an industry itself isn't hugely feminine focused. I work with four other board directors who are all male. I was the first female board director that Vika as a business, which is a global business, has ever had. But I was really confident that I can do this. I think we have to have, as females, self-belief that we can. And no matter what they think, that doesn't really impact us, because actually, as we know that we can do it and we've got all the resilience to keep trying. And some of the things that I think are really important, you know, we're taught at school that taking part is important. Well, it is. Yeah, of course it is. But so is winning and so is losing. And the best thing that we can ever do is win and lose. Sometimes we'll win, but when we lose, we learn things. We learn how to improve, how to get better. It builds our resilience. And actually, if you want it, you've got that goal to get it, then there's nothing stopping you. Just have the confidence to go out and get it.
I couldn't agree more. I think there's a real connectivity between young people who disengage with sport at an earlier age and forgetting to win and lose. I'm an Evertonian for myself, please forgive me. So I learned to lose a long time ago, but I think that there's a real importance in that. Sarah, I'm coming your way.
Yeah, I suppose it's really interesting actually listening to what Amin just said there in terms of education, because I think we want women to go into these job roles, these senior leadership job roles, but actually when we talk about business and finance, those are male-dominated professions. So I think we need to look at, why are girls going into girl jobs and boys going into boy jobs? And when you take it back, it's looking at what we're doing at school as well. So if you think about the subjects that you do at school when you're in secondary school, there tends to be really gender specific subjects that students are taking. So, and those subjects create, so girls take more creative subjects, hence why they tend to go into more creative job areas. So we've got really gendered career opportunities. So that limits for women what we think we can do. So as educators and as an educator, I think it's really important that we're breaking those barriers down in all elements. And that starts at primary school. That starts with the books that girls are reading at primary school, the books that boys are reading at primary school. It's all connected to all of that. And then when we go to secondary school, it's looking at the subjects that we're choosing to take. You know, why do girls take food tech and boys take engineering? You know, it's breaking those barriers down within that, and then looking at how we genderize career opportunities later on.
It's just occurred to me, I'm looking at this audience and it's the first time ever that we've had a 50-50 audience, I think, which is fantastic. So well done, Burnley. Just a show of hands, I'm not going to come to you, but just a show of hands. Do you think your career choices are going to be limited or enhanced by your gender? Show of hands, I'm not going to come to you. Do you think you're... So those that are you are the back, you don't think that gender, whether you're a male or female or however you identify, you don't think that impacts on your career? Okay, that's interesting. Do you think this is an age, we talked about primary school, gender stereotypes are formed around about the age of 5?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, my background, actually, I'm staff development manager, but I am a sociology lecturer, so we teach a lot about this. But looking at things like the toys that children play with when they're really, really small, and how that impacts potentially on direction. So if you think about girls and boys. So girls tend to be able to write their name quicker than boys. So by the time they start primary school, usually girls have learnt to write their name, whereas boys haven't. When you track that back, it comes down to the toys that girls and boys are playing with. So girls tend to play with more intricate things, whereas boys tend to play with more kind of playing out, running around. So girls are adopting skills really early around being able to, the dexterity in their fingers to be able to write their name, but also communication. So whilst girls will sit down and have a tea party with their dolls, that's developing communication skills, where boys are being praised for being quite sort of dominant and getting out there and running around. So that impacts when you get in a classroom, because girls are ready to learn, boys aren't. And then there's differences there in the ways that girls and boys are being treated in terms of the classrooms right down at primary school. So yeah, it massively has an impact.
Thanks, Sarah. I'm coming to the audience. Just one second. Let me lunge.
I tended to lean more towards playing video games with my mum rather than playing with dolls. So when the time came to pick GCSEs, I, instead of everyone picking art or food tech, as I decided to go into computer science. And all throughout that, I also tend to find myself competing with the guys because I was the only girl in the class. And here in college, I'm doing game design and I'm one of two girls in my group. I do still feel a little competitive with the guys, but even still, I'm having fun and we all treat each other as equals.
And who's your role model? Because you've kind of made different decisions as you've been growing up. Did you have a specific role model that went, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do gaming.
Well, I really enjoyed playing video games with my mum. It was mainly my mum who steered me towards this, because she just thought, I wonder if Lexi would like this. So she just popped a video game in front of a PlayStation 2 and just like, want to play? And I'm just like, why not? And that's how I just tended to fall down this path of what I'm doing now.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Any feedback from there? No? Okay. Oh, I'm coming.
I think on the point that Sarah said, I'm from an educational background and I'm a secondary school teacher first and foremost. And I think as a student, there's that sort of perception that your gender will influence the career you choose. But then once you're in that career, that sort of whole prejudice will go away. I'm sort of 10 years into my career and that prejudice is very much still there. So in teaching, women aged 30 to 39 were the biggest number of leavers of any demographic in that profession. So I think you're exactly right. It strips right back to grassroots, but it's not stopping as we progress further and further. So what do we do and where do we go from here? It's massive, isn't it?
Darshan, did you have a question?
Well, I was actually just going back to saying, maybe would like to think now that it is a generational thing. So the fact that we've got these growing number of women going into directorships, that the emerging businesses with younger owners are more open to having women on board, and it's not about whether it's a man or a woman, it's about your ability.
And it's having diversity, isn't it? It's having diversity of thought, diversity of ability, diversity of conversations. Dawn?
I think when you think that we all should be working toward a meritocracy, and it's what we contribute and what we achieve and what we deliver to the business. And actually, if you think from a female perspective versus a male versus someone from a different ethnic minority, we all have different opinions, different ways of working, different thoughts. Quite often, I think, you know, what makes some of my peers really impressive if they've got really, really powerful voices. But I think sometimes what makes me different in that boardroom is I sit there and listen and process and think about things. And then when I say something, then it's about what I've heard and it contributes and it does absolutely add value. It's just a different way of delivering it.
I've got one. I'm coming right to the back.
Based on what Sarah said, who do you think's like to blame for this? Like, is it parents on the way they bring up their children, or is it teachers when you get to school? And like, what do you think?
Who's to blame? Is anyone to blame? Sarah?
Do you know what? You should come to one of my lectures, because we talk exactly about that and we can have a really good solid debate about it. But I think, yeah, I don't know is the answer. And I think, you know, we're all responsible, aren't we? As a society, we're all responsible for that. And I think that whilst we're talking about in the world of work and women in the world of work, until we break down some of those other things that perhaps are stopping women outside of work. So whether that's expectations around childcare and who looks after children, and those policies that are surrounding that in terms of what we're entitled to. Yeah, I don't think we can answer that question very straightforwardly. So I'm totally going to sit on the fence with that one.
I'll just get the tweezers to get the splinters. I think there's a real, everyone in this room is a role model, right? And I think we all have a responsibility to be visible as a role model. Lexi, you know, to be one of two people in a class in an industry that is not female sort of friendly or female populated. So you're a role model to be visible, to do what you do. Everyone else who's doing your course, you know, in your industry, was all standing up and going, you know what, I'm happy to share what I do. You think, oh, I'm only just, you're not. You're all doing something. So all be that visible role model. Well, that got us all kind of started, didn't it, this morning in Burnley. Right, question number two. A new survey, this is going to get us as well. A new survey by the Trade Unions Congress found that nearly a fifth of workers have been told they were not allowed to discuss pay with their colleagues. Is it a good idea to know what your colleagues are earning? Oh, Dawn. Do you chat about this in the boardroom at Vika?
We were obviously always talking about how much we earn. No, not at all. And to be honest, I just ask, for what purpose? What's it going to do? It's not going to make my life any better or worse. I'm not interested. Ultimately, we spend quite a lot of time coveting what everyone else has. For what purpose? We can't control that. The only thing we can control is ourselves, what we earn, what we get offered. And do you know what? If you get offered a job and you don't like the money that they're paying, don't take it. Wait for something else. Go for something else. But the only thing that we can control is what we can control. We can't control other people. So we can make those choices based upon our area of control.
Okay, Sarah, education.
I think it's probably a little bit different for myself and Dawn, because obviously working in the public sector, our salaries are quite transparent in terms of these graded salary scales. So we kind of know, I suppose, what each other are earning. I think from an equality perspective, I think it's that conversation of, you know, if men and women are being paid differently and there's not open discussion about that, how's that ever going to change? But yeah, it's a tricky one, is that. I think I'm working in a privileged position in the sense that we do have transparency, but I understand in the private sector, how are we going to challenge that if we're not transparent about who's earning what?
And I mean, it's probably the same with yourself, isn't it, in local authority?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you asked that question, it reminded me of something really interesting that happened in a previous business as I was a director. So what we had was, we had a member of staff that looked after all the HR kind of stuff, and she had a list of all everyone's salaries. So she must have been photocopying something anyway. So what she did was she left the original in the photocopier. So someone then saw it. What? Oh, did it kick off or did it kick off or what? And it wasn't just between male and female. It was like, that person does sod all. And look at them, they get paid more than me. She takes the piss coming in every morning late. How can they earn that? And how can I earn this? Oh, it was amazing, honestly, the way it all kicked off. And next minute you get is people knocking on the door saying they want a pay rise. Right. So I think discussing salaries is not the way forward, because it's not about male, female. It's about what it does. It brings out that competitive nature where you start comparing yourself to another individual and saying, I am better than that person, so I should be earning more than that person. And there's a number of fundamental things to kind of look at here. So if you think about typical industries where you have people that you would say bring the business in, and then you have people that support that to happen. So almost you've got people that work in sales and you've got people that work within administration. Chances are that people that work on the front end bringing business in will more than likely earn a little bit more money, because that's, they can actually say, well, actually my value to the business is this. And people that support it probably won't earn as much. But then there's that thing where it comes down to work ethic, it comes down to professionalism, it comes down to coming to work every day on time. And they'll say, hang on, regardless of what job you do, what job I do, actually I'm more punctual, I work harder, I take more on board, and all these variety of different things. So I think for me, discussing pay doesn't resolve anything. However, I think there still needs to be some kind of analysis into certain industries where we do focus on that male-female pay gap. The other thing as well is, and again, just thinking about business, a couple of people I've spoken to recently actually said something really kind of meaningful. If you run a business, don't do it for earning money, because you won't earn money. You'll only really earn the money once you sell the business and you exit the business. That's where the money really sits. So it's quite an interesting take on that, because people just think that you run a business and you earn a lot of money. Very few directors I've come across do that. You do it because you've got a passion. You do it because you love doing that. And chances are your employees will probably earn more than you anyway. So I think there's a few different perspectives looking at this. And there's people in the audience smiling that know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm nodding my head right here. any thoughts from the audience? Any thoughts?
Is it not a double-edged sword, though? I mean, like, if you've got a salary that's undisclosed on a job advert, it feeds directly into that sort of women's complex of not of plucking numbers out of thin air. I sort of echo what you said. There needs to be some sort of, not a quota, almost like a guideline. But I know as a woman, when I see a job advert that has a salary undisclosed, a man perhaps who sees that job advert would probably go into that interview and pitch for a salary way higher than I do. So surely there's some benefits to knowing a rough guideline maybe of different pay routes.
Jane Dalton, I'm coming your way. Welcome to Burnley, Jane.
Thank you very much. Very nice to be here. I just wanted to add to that last point, actually, about that playing to females' lack of confidence, potentially. I heard a story recently of a guy who was going for a new job, a brand new employer, who has an active, something between a mentor and a sponsor in the business world. And he said to this person, two men talking, oh, you know, what do I do? I've been offered this as the job. And the guy said, ask for, you know, about 30 grand more than that. Go back and do it. And I don't think the person on their own would have gone back for that, but as a result of this conversation did, got it straight away. But it's the support mechanisms that we have as women that are extremely important. And it's not just somewhat a shoulder to cry on sometimes in mentoring, or how do I get through this difficult situation? It's the people pushing us forward that is very important, because it's the things that we wouldn't necessarily do ourselves. But the minute you feel that shove on your shoulders, go, no, you're doing it, it's much easier to kind of, oh, okay, fine, right, I'll go for it then. And what have you got to lose? But it's very hard to put yourself in that situation consciously otherwise.
And we had the conversation this morning with one of our guests here about that sort of having that peer group, sometimes about asking for help, is it okay? And I think it's really important, no matter what stage you are in your career, whatever you're planning to do when you kind of leave college or move on for another job, it's ask for help, ask for people around you, because you know what, people do want to help. Actually, that does bring us on very nicely to our final question. And as I say, it's all about keeping this conversation going at North Power Women, hashtag NPW podcast. Our final question is that, what advice would you give to your 18-year-old self? Would it not be swear very much? I mean, just saying.
Probably one answer would probably not be appropriate.
But now everyone only wants that one.
Yeah, true. Make the most of everything. But no, I think what I would probably say is that if I had to give advice to my 18-year-old self, well, just a bit of background context, that when I was 18 and I went to university, I can probably count on one hand how many lectures I actually went to in a six-month period. I think I extended Freshers Week into a six-month kind of term. And I think then what happened was one of my mates ratted out on me to my dad, and who found out literally I wasn't going to any university. Only schedule I knew was in Manchester, what night was student night at different clubs. That's the only thing I knew about. Other than that, I didn't have a clue about anything else. So anyway, I quickly got hauled out of university because I was given a choice to say, do you want to go to university, carry on, but actually travel from home rather than stay there, or do you want to work? And I thought, I'll go for work because I know I'm never going to put my head down. It just wasn't me, unfortunately. So anyway, what I would say to myself is, I wish I had the common sense I do now back then. And I think career choices wise, I think there's a career choice that I wish when I was 18 I had really gone through and pursued. And don't get me wrong, I'm happy doing what I'm doing now, but had I gone back 20 years and actually done what I really wanted to do, I know in that 20-year period, I would have been a lot happier rather than searching 20 years to be happy. And I think that's kind of making sure you live in that moment and don't kind of succumb to any kind of brick walls, really, in many ways. Everything's achievable through hard work, without a doubt, but you've just got to be prepared to do it and have a balance between having fun and hard work. Just don't go too much in the direction of one or the other, because both are pitfalls within them.
Okay, not too much fun, but you're still having fun now, right?
No, I'm boring now. I'm old, yeah.
I'm editing that old bit out. Sweary, but old. Sarah?
Oh, that's hard. I think you have these expectations, don't you, when you're 18, that suddenly in 5 years' time your life's going to look like this. And I think for me, I saw that very much as a straight line. And looking back now, I think you've got to see it as a squiggle. Things don't always work out exactly how you have planned, but do you know what? It's fun along the way. And I think as long as you're enjoying yourself, you're taking those challenges and you're unashamedly you. Don't apologise for who you are. Be comfortable in who you are and enjoy life.
Oh, I love that. Be comfortable in your own skin. Dawn.
I'd have definitely said enjoy it. We're only on this planet for a certain amount of time, so you've got to enjoy everything you do. The other thing I would say is I tell myself not to sweat the small stuff. There's been a lot of time in my life, in my career, where I know that I've gone home crying, something hasn't happened well, and I can honestly tell you, I can't even remember what those things are. I remember going home crying, can't think of what on earth that was about, because they're just not important. Honestly, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to lose, you're going to fail, you're going to win, and it's all going to mean that you're going to grow and you're going to learn, and it's honestly, it's brilliant. If you do something you love, it's really worth putting all your effort into.
I think it is. It's trying to find, how do you find that thing that you love? I'm a big fan of say yes and work it out later, which has definitely led me on a little bit of a squiggle, but that's okay. Thank you so much for being a fantastic audience today here in Burnley. Massive thanks to Burnley College for supporting and hosting us. Thanks all of you for giving up your time this afternoon to come along and join the conversation. We want you to keep the conversation going. Please stay in touch. And if there's anyone you would like to hear or any questions you would like to discuss on the Northern Power Women podcast, then please do get in touch. Massive, massive, massive thanks to our stellar panel and our stellar audience. Thank you so much, Burnley.
Another big thanks to Burnley College for being our hosts, and thanks to our audience as well for coming along. We love to see you, so do keep your eye on Twitter at North Power Women for details of our next recording. And if you'd like to host us, we'd love to come. Just get in touch. podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. Now, in the big interview this month, I spoke to Emily Cox. She's the Group Head of Colleague Relations at Lloyds Banking Group. We talked about what it was like for her being a young woman in the financial sector during the global economic crisis. I also talked about how she got promoted after returning to work part-time and how the culture around shared parental leave will become crucial for firms to address in the future. I started by asking Emily why she chose the financial sector for her long career.
I don't think I chose the sector. The sector chose me. So actually, I started my career many years ago. I trained as a trade union lawyer, and the fact that I now work in banking could not be more surprising to my 20-year-old self. But I moved with what is now my husband up to Newcastle from London 15, 16 years ago. And I was working in private practice in a relatively big law firm in the northeast, and I was very happy there. And then the banking crisis happened and Northern Rock collapsed. And they tendered for their first ever employment lawyer. And I went in and basically never left. They'd never had any employment lawyers before. They needed employment lawyers, but actually, ensuring that a bank of some sort survived in some form felt like a really important mission and something that was incredibly important for the Northeast, not just for our economy, but because of the sheer number of people and friends and family that Northern Rock had created or recruited over the years. So I joined a team that was fighting for survival and didn't leave.
I was about to say, you joined a team at the biggest crisis point of that whole organisation's existence. That must have been a baptism of fire.
It was. And, you know, swathes of management left almost overnight. And the irony of it was that sort of situation opened up opportunities for people like me. You know, I was young, I was driven, as I say, entirely committed to seeing the business succeed in some form. And, you know, I think despite everything that was happening to us, it was one of the best work experiences of my life because we succeeded. You know, we saved part of it, and it's the business that became Virgin Money, and then that was eventually refloated on the stock exchange. So it went a complete circle. But
I think there is something about it. It's not just the economic situation that a business finds itself in. It's the purpose, it's the values, it's the people who are there that build great teams.
The story you've just told in some way surprises me, that as a young woman entering a very male-dominated sector at a time of crisis, I thought you might be telling me a very different story about your experiences.
No, I mean, I met some amazing people, and we weren't bound by hierarchies. There was nobody else to do it. We were the people that had to do it. But equally, it gave me my firm beliefs in equality and inclusion. I mean, I'd always believed in fairness and social justice, and that's why I became a trade union lawyer. But what I worked out very quickly is that as a trade union lawyer, you can only help people after the worst has happened to them. And all I could ever say to people is, I'll get you some money if we win. You know, I can't get you your dignity or your pride or your self-respect back, but actually, if you are on the inside influencing outcomes for many thousands of people, that's actually more satisfying, which is getting it right from the start. And I've, you know, thoroughly enjoyed all of those opportunities. So, you know, having come from a strong principal background in terms of fairness and equality, what I saw from the financial crisis is boardrooms and exec committees that were dominated by, you know, basically white men.
Yeah.
And, you know, having none of that diversity of thought, none of the challenge, none of the rigour. And you can see what, you know, that is a case study of what happens if you don't get inclusion right at the start.
How was that experience of working with predominantly white male dominated boardrooms? Because that's the image of finance that I think a lot of people from the outside have. What is it like being a woman in those circumstances?
Well, I just think over the last 15 years, a whole number of professions have moved on. So, you know, having been in the legal profession, where again, you see many women entering that profession, but the jobs at the top of firms, most of the partners being men, financial services was no different. Equally, also the trade unions, you know, it was, you know, that was the norm. But many of us have been brought up with the idea that as, you know, women, you could go as far as you wanted to do. You know, you were just as good as anybody else. And I think I was lucky in the sense that I worked for great people who saw my potential and pushed me on. And actually, a number of those happened to be men. They became my mentors, they became my sponsors, and, you know, to the extent that I can't get rid of them now, you know, they're sort of permanent fixtures in my life. I think we've seen a real acceleration, actually, about what is acceptable with things, you know, like the Hampton-Alexander Review, etc. And, you know, I think anybody, men and women, look at businesses these days, and if you don't see inclusion happening at the top of firms and you don't see that commitment at the top, people don't want to work there.
You mentioned mentorship there, and I really wanted to talk to you about that. Can you explain a bit more about the impact that being mentored had on your own career progression?
Mentors are great, and they talk to you, they encourage you, they give you the benefit of their, you know, their experience and their connections. But the people that have made the big difference for me have been people in a, what I call that sponsorship role, which means that they are in the senior seats and are really able to advocate for their people. And I've been lucky enough to have a couple of those during my career, and they are so important because they are the people that have the power and the influence. And I think a lot of people now use their influence in a very generous way, and a lot of those people happen to be men, which is a really positive thing. But I think for a number of us, we need both. We need both sponsors and mentors, you know, mentors to help us realise and enhance our own professional capabilities, but sponsors to really push our case at the top.
And what advice do you give for somebody who's listening to this and thinking, yes, that's what I need in my career, how on earth do I find one?
Well, I think there will always be people that will be interested in your career. I mean, if you're motivated like I am by people, values and purpose,
then who you work for is really important, and you should always work for somebody who is really interested in you and your career and how they can help you flourish. And if you're not working for somebody like that, then you need to find someone. And then I think it's about having that conversation, because we all have to take responsibility for our own careers, and to talk openly about where we'd like to get to and how people can help us. And actually, through having conversations with people, that's how you find mentors and sponsors. And I'm amazed actually by the number of people that will help you if you ask. One of the things I say to the many people that I've mentored, and particularly women, is that you have to have a network both internally and externally. And I think too many people see that as, if you go for coffee with someone, you're just swinging the lead, you won't be seen as important, you're too busy doing your day job. Well, actually, it's vitally important, because it helps you, particularly with an internal network, it helps you be better connected to different elements of the business. It helps you have your finger on the pulse, but equally, through talking to people, that's how you can find connections to other people who can help you. And there've been various inflection points in my career where I have asked for help and been amazed by the generosity of time that people will give to you. If you say, look, I'm thinking about doing this, so I'm not really sure, would you mind having a cup of coffee with me? And people will always, they like being asked for help, actually. And I wish I'd done more of that when I was younger. It's something that I've only done in later life.
I want to change gears a little bit now and talk to you about your experience as a working mother. You are a mother. How much time did you take out of your career when you had your children?
So I had my daughter Aoife, she just turned 5 yesterday, so 5 years ago. It's always a funny time of year because it makes you very reflective as a parent.
Yeah.
And I had the first 6 months off, and then my husband took the second 6 months, and we did shared parental leave. And then we had a bit of a handover in the middle where I took some holidays. We had a month together as a family, which was lovely. And I just found that actually was transformational for two reasons. It enabled me to go back to work knowing that our daughter was with her dad, and that she was safe and she was looked after. And that helped me manage, the natural guilt that all parents feel, I think, going back to work. But the second element was it helped my husband really develop his relationship with our daughter. And at the beginning he used to carry her around like she was some sort of porcelain doll, and by the end of it they had a great relationship. And I think really what it's meant is we're in it together, so we equally took the same amount of time. And I think that was transformational for him too. I'd like to say that he got 6 months paid shared parental leave.
Wow.
And that's mainly because he worked in automotive in Sunderland at the time, so an entirely male dominated place. They'd never heard of shared parental leave. And I think they were a bit scared, and they knew I was an employment lawyer by background, so that all helped. So, but I think through doing that, Ross has enabled other people to feel brave enough about taking it. And it's amazing now to see the number of dads that will come up and ask him about it and then do it, because it's becoming more normalised, actually. And I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting you talk about the attitude of his colleagues. I mean, we know that less than a third of men take their full paternity leave, let alone parental leave. And there's still, I was reading a really interesting article the other day saying that there is still a belief between men and women that the father remains more financially responsible than the mother for his family. I think it was like 82% of mothers thought that, yes, the fathers were, it was more the onus on them to be financially responsible. I think it's tough for a lot of men to take that leap and take either, just parental leave pay or unpaid leave. That culture doesn't seem to be there.
No, and actually when I was at Virgin Money, I mean, one of the things I was really proud about is that we matched the same amount of paid time off that dads could have or partners. It was the same as the mums.
Yeah.
So we made sure that money wasn't the issue.
But that said, that wasn't enough to get people to take it. I mean, a whole couple of years, you know, with a great benefit that nobody utilised because it wasn't socially acceptable. So in order to change that, we got a couple of really senior guys to take it, and then more importantly, to talk about it. And you know what? It took the lid off. And suddenly we had, it was something like a 60% take-up rate. And then in the year just before I left Virgin Money to join Lloyds, I think that was something, you know, it was in the high 80s in terms of take-up of dads. Because actually it was financially viable. Yeah, so that made a big difference. And it was culturally acceptable. And people were looking and saying, well, why wouldn't I take some time off? I'll never get this opportunity again. Yeah. And I think it's a brilliant thing. And as you start to see the war for talent, I think we'll start to see these things become major influences in where people want to work, because it says something about the sort of business you are and what you stand for. And I think the loyalty it brings is exponential from both the mums and the dads, actually. Yeah.
Well, it shows you, the example you've just given shows that doing one thing, like the financial structure, doesn't make a big difference, but doing a second thing shows that that tanker can start to turn when you get those senior men taking that role.
Yeah, so you've got to do both, I think.
I want to talk a bit about your experience of returning to work now, Emily, please, because when you returned, you went part-time. And I think there's almost a fear or almost a belief amongst some women returners that, well, if you go back and you go part-time, your career ambition is over. You're not going to get promoted. You're not going to get any higher up the food chain because you're only part-time. What's your experience been?
So I was actually promoted whilst I was part-time, and I can remember vividly getting a call from the CEO, ironically on a non-working day. I was looking after my daughter and her little friend, and they were both, they were about 13 months old, and they were destroying my living room. And I got a call, and I was off. It was a big job, and I remember being completely and utterly taken aback. And actually, I thought, I can't do it. So I managed to say no three times, and it was a combination of confidence. There's something about when you have children and the ongoing tiredness after you've returned to it. It's not just the, you know, you often think, or I thought anyway, it was all about the pregnancy. I didn't realise it goes on for years afterwards. Yeah. And, you know, sort of feeling that, you know, I won't be able to give it my full attention to make it work. And actually, that was probably the first time where a network was really important to me. And I was, you know, I kept saying no, and I was pretty confident that was the right thing to do for me and my family. But there must have been just a niggling doubt. And I took my iPad to the hairdressers, as that was the only time that I ever got to think. And once I was having my hair done, I sent a couple of emails to people who knew me but didn't work. I was at Virgin at the time. And said, you know, this is the situation, what do you think? And they were all very generous with their time. So somebody sent me, you know, a long email back. Another person met me for coffee. And he listened to me and he said, you know, that's really interesting. I mean, you're talking to me about, you know, what happens if it goes wrong. Have you thought about what happens if it goes well? Mm. Yeah, and it was things like that that were enough, really, to challenge my mindset, which I needed, I think, from an external perspective, to challenge my own sort of tunnel vision around where I was. And you know, credit to Virgin, I went back and said, actually, I've thought about it and it's really embarrassing, but I would really quite like to take that job and give it a go. And they gave it to me, and of course it worked. And you know, I think that just giving working parents a bit of space actually is incredibly helpful. And, you know, encouraging people to think a bit more broadly and to talk to people about it is super important, because I think at times you can't see the wood for the trees, but that doesn't mean to say that you aren't making a mistake if you say no. And so I was promoted, and was promoted on a part-time basis. And it was a role actually that happened to then transfer, you know, really transform my career. And I, you know, I have no regrets from doing it. but I recognise it now in other parents, that sort of look of utter panic, as you suggest something, because they're just trying to, you know, people are trying to exist on a day-to-day basis at times.
Yes.
And as I say to some of my team, you know, if you just want to tell me it's all about survival, I think that's fine. Let's just survive together. But once you've got through next week, there are some opportunities that are, you know, open to you, and let's talk then.
I think that's really refreshing for a lot of people to hear. We've had discussions before on the podcast about job sharing at a senior level, and companies, I think, are starting to open up to the idea that even senior level job shares, particularly between two women returners or perhaps a man who wants to spend more time with his family as well, they can work.
Well, that's one of the reasons I joined Lloyds. They're super progressive on all of this stuff, you know, for men and women. It is not unusual at all to see job shares in senior roles. It is actually completely normal, and it just drives a very different and inclusive culture. So almost all of my team now work on very different working patterns. We can make it work. I think that our generation, we are really benefiting from the changes in technology that make it able to happen. So Lloyds offered me a job. I thought they were going to tell me it's going to be based in London. Actually, I'm home-based and I live in the Northeast. And that was amazing. So when Efi started school in September, I was able to take her to school and meet her coming home, and nobody batted an eyelid, because it completely works with having a senior role in Lloyds.
What advice would you give, Emily, to any women listening who perhaps don't work for such progressive firms, who are part-time, who still have that ambition and still want to make their work work for them, as opposed to making their life around their work?
Well, I mean, I genuinely do think that we are on the cusp of a complete sea change in the way in which these things are working, because I think digital and technology is transforming the ways of working. And I would say to people, always think really carefully about, you know, it's the people, the values and the purpose of the organisation you work for. And if you haven't got a progressive business, and a, you know, and actually you can have progressive businesses and dinosaur line managers, is, you know, you have to challenge that, and if they won't listen, go and work elsewhere, because it makes such a difference. And I think it's completely possible to be a very successful executive and to be a great mum as well.
Thanks so much to Emily Cox from Lloyds Banking Group for her time. Whose life and career would you love to know more about? Do let us know. You can email podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. It's time now for Ask the Hive, a place where if you have a problem or a question and you're not sure of what the answer or the solution may be, come and ask the Northern Power Women Hive Mind. This month, the question is all about leaders.
Who makes a better leader, an extrovert or an introvert? And is it necessarily the one who shouts the loudest that is the best, has the best qualities for a leader? And how do we encourage those who are introverts to be leaders if it's not their natural way of being?
From experience, the people who actually put people above them and put people forward, as opposed to being the person in the front, tend to be the better leader. I always find that it is better for people to guide and sort of almost like coaching perspective on leadership, you know, bringing everybody along, and as opposed to being the person who's at the forefront and being the person completely driving things all the times. Leadership should be more of a devolved kind of process, really.
I think that introverted people make the best leaders, as they're able to not focus on themselves and see things from all angles.
We can encourage introverts to be leaders, even if it's not natural to them, by making them do one thing in their career that's scary, or one thing in their life that they're scared to do, and pushing them out of their comfort zone.
Hello there, I'm Jill Hodgson. I'm president of Flowers from the Farm. I'd actually go with introverts, but this leads on to how do we encourage those introverts to put themselves forward to be the leaders? If we can get this right, then an introvert will be on the lookout for other people like themselves, not necessarily taken in by the first to put themselves forward. They'll be looking behind those in the front row.
I think that extroverts probably make the best and strongest leaders, as they're probably most able or best equipped to be able to communicate in a way that people understand their leadership style. I think that introverts should always be encouraged to develop leadership skills, because with leadership there's no one size fits all, just like there's many different types of humans on this earth and we all relate to different things in a positive way.
I'm Felicity from Pinsent. In terms of extroverts or introverts, I would say that neither is particularly more important than the other. It's other characteristics that are important, I think, in a leader. How do we encourage introverts to be leaders if it's not natural to them? So I think that being a leader is about focusing on your people, and being an introvert, you can focus on your people while being an introvert. There's nothing particularly that you would necessarily need to be doing differently, I would say.
Colin Carmichael from Barclays. And who makes the best leaders, extroverts or introverts? Do you know what? I think both can make exactly the same contribution. I think this is an understanding of where somebody's energy comes from. So extroverts are able to get energy from the other people that they're with, whereas introverts need some time alone to almost kind of recharge their batteries before going out and interacting with others. So I think an understanding that if you're working with an introvert and you're a leader who is an introvert, it's about making sure that you make time for yourself so that you can give the positive energy that others require from you as part of your leadership.
A big thank you if you offered your advice this month. It's so much appreciated. Next month is the turn of the Northern Power Women Shoutouts, a place where you can shine a spotlight on someone that you think's broken down a barrier or gone an extra mile or faced a challenge at work and who you think deserves a pat on the back. If you'd like to give someone a shout out, all you need to do is record a voice memo on your phone. Tell us who you are, who they are and why they deserve that shout out. You can email them to podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. Oh, and of course, do come to one of our upcoming events as well, and you can tell us there. Check Twitter @NorthPowerWomen or online at northernpowerwomen.co.uk for all the details. Well, there we go, for yet another month of great stories, advice and ideas. A huge thank you to you for listening. Please do leave us your feedback and reviews wherever you're listening. And please spread the word. We would just love more people to come and join in the conversation. Do save the date. The next episode arrives for you on Tuesday, March the 3rd, 2020. Not long before the Northern Power Women Awards. I do hope you have your tickets. Until then, this is the Northern Power Women podcast. I'm Sam Walker, and this has been a What Goes On Media production for Northern Power Women.